So, good morning, everyone. Who's here? Good morning! Today, we examine that intent of purity, and it would seem from the readings we had today to do with purity of faith. However, it is also something to do with being unattached to the world, or as Jesus says in the Gospel of Thomas, becoming one who passes by. Sometimes this may be translated as wayfarers or transients, transient to the world, as it were. So this will be the third time I have spoken on purity. And if you know me, you know that the first time I looked up the meanings of some words, like cosmos or the world as they have it in the KJV, King James Version, versus patros, so cosmos versus patros, hagos and hagnize, which are translated as purity and purifies, but which also have a meaning of sanctifying or making holy, so have a sacrificial meaning to them versus amartanel, failing or missing, or sin. So amartanel is sin. And you may not remember that from a few years ago, but there you go. The second time I talked a lot about what it meant to be not of this world, to be, as Jesus says in the Gospel of Thomas, a passerby, transient, to the transient things of the world. And I contrasted that with Jesus' words in today's Gospel reading, beginning John 17:11, where he draws a parallel between him being one with the Father and us being one with him. That we, as belonging to Jesus, now also belong to the Father. That with Jesus in us and the Father in Jesus, we may partake in the glory of the Father through Jesus. So that was the last two times. But I thought this time I would do things a bit differently because my talks are usually jam-packed with lots of know-how, but they're often so dense even I have trouble following them if I listen to them again after a couple of years, which is what I did this time. So anyway, I was thinking about what all this purity stuff was. And, you know, it is related to sin. There's a monk called Justin Popovich who explains that purity is being without sin. But sin just means failing, falling down, missing the target. And it implies what they call lawlessness or anomie, but should really be called being without discipline, being without principles in life. And it implies not knowing Jesus or the Father, because as John says, if you say you know the Father, but you are without this discipline, this lawfulness and principled action, you cannot know the Father at all. John makes great note of the things of the world being transient and the things of the Father being eternal. So the person who is of the kingdom is of the eternal, and the person who is of the world is ephemeral. Things of the world suffer corruption and come to an end. So the things of the world corrupt, and the things of the Father hallow, make whole. And in this sense, we can think of purity as faithfulness to the commandments of Jesus and the sayings of Jesus, and also being untrammeled by the things of the world. Jesus says in another place, if you do not fast from the world, you will not find the kingdom. What is the world? This idea of the world seems to be less grass and trees, stones and rivers, though these things are also ephemeral. It is far more that artificial world of thought and feeling, desire and difficulty, that of appetites and thirsts, of things, power, currency, that which is Caesar's, wants or apparent needs. And the point being made is these things are transient, corruptible and corrupting. So to be pure is to entrain your being to the incorruptible. As Paul says, sown in corruption, raised in incorruption. Sown in dishonor, raised in glory. sown in weakness, raised in power. Sown a natural body, raised the spiritual body. So this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. In a word, theosis, becoming one with God. Which reminds me of a story about a white queen of heaven. She was here in the human realm, and in fact believed herself to be human, until in a dream she met a man who could fly. And when she asked him how to fly, he said, "Just imagine." And so she imagined. And at first it was hard to imagine, but she began to imagine she was a bird with wings. And she became a little white dove and flew up to the clouds. When she reached the clouds, she became human-like again, but all dressed in white with shining white wings and a crown on her head, like she was someone important. She knew then that somehow she was that important person. And next to her was one of her advisors. And she had concerns about all the people fighting each other in the world below. She wished they would treat each other better. But in particular, she asked her advisor, who she called Teacher, what was wrong with her husband? Because an awful lot of what ails us human beings is that we don't get along very well. Always striving against each other, no one wanting to take the inferior position. Everyone wanting to be in control, because it's nice to be in control, I guess. And so much of what we're often looking for is how to get our lives in control, when so much of life seems completely beyond our control. Take death. We're all going to die. But it's given. We don't choose it. Or something less morbid. Your native language, you didn't choose that either. And a lot of things to do with relationships also, you didn't get to choose. And in this striving to be able to choose things, to exercise free will, we often make mistakes and hurt others, gathering harm, gathering dust. And if you've experienced being conned, being hoodwinked by people you trusted, especially if they have authority, it makes you very unwilling to trust anyone who claims to know the truth about things. So oftentimes, people who gave us good information, we ignore or are suspicious of or feel threatened by. Sometimes, we try to foist our own ideas about what the rules should be onto other people, when those aren't really the rules and they will never agree to them. And so, we miss the mark. Happens a lot, but it's understandable. We can think of purity as diligently moving towards the Father. As he says, Jesus is in the Father and the Father is in him. And he has given the glory which the Father gave to him to those the Father has given him, so they may be one with him and the Father. That's a pretty long sentence, but I hope you understand. It's a pretty long sentence in the Gospel as well. And he asks that those may be kept with him and the Father, looked after, that they may remain in that glory. And I guess the sense is that he asks that his disciples, his apostles, ultimately his church, remain pure in that eternal regard for the Father. And as we know, the church, in the main, did not remain pure. Far from it. And that's partly because of the inner circle and outer circle structure. And that's just the nature of things. That's not it's not a power thing. You're always going to end up with inner circles and outer circles, or hierarchies, if you like, because there are people that just can't understand certain things and other people that can. And so the people that can understand will form some kind of quote-unquote inner circle, and the people who can't understand will find themselves in some kind of wider, looser version of the same thing, which doesn't have the same qualities as that of the inner circle version. And when the outer circle group, or when the outer group becomes resentful, disdainful, and disrespectful of the inner teaching of the inner group, then the inner group disappears for a time, and their light, glory, and purity seems gone from the world. Because it's not so much a matter of being told the secrets that the people who are in the inner circle have, because all the secrets are actually already available in the outer form. It's applying what you already have, which gains you the same understanding that people in the inner circle have. But because it takes work to apply those so-called secrets, work and practice, only a handful of people do it. Most of the literature of early Christianity was written by those people, the people with deeper knowledge, deeper understanding. Most of the stuff which has come down to us, including the canonical, but also the so-called heretical heterodox heresis material, the Gnostic material, was written by people in that inner circle and written for people also in the inner circle and people in the outer circle that hopefully they might learn and with practice and work. And the outer forms of the Holy Eucharist, the service, our service here, that people come and receive communion from, were, I suppose, originally part of that work towards the inner circle, because at a certain point, many of the attendees, the catechumens, probationers, they were sent off after a talk like mine, sent off after sermon. Communion was only for people who had done the necessary inner work. But to be perfectly frank, when they decided to make the Holy Eucharist available in its entirety to everyone all of the time, when that was done, there were still other rites that remained unknown to the great mass of Christianity and Christians. And really were only available to people that knew what they were doing. And knowing what you were doing is something like being pure. Or on the other hand, you may recall Arjun, and his brothers and cousins all trying to hit the target bird made from wood. And Dronacharya, their war master, asked each one of them if they can see the bird, trying to hit a bird, wooden bird. And yes, each one says. And he then asks what else they see. And each one says they see the sky, the tree, the river, and so on. Each one says he can see some things other than the bird. Each one of them lets loose their arrows. Each one of them misses the bird. Finally, Drona gets to Arjun and asks if he can see the bird, and Arjun answers yes. And so Drona asks, all right then, what else about it? And Arjun says, I'm sorry, nothing else. Why not? Asks Drona. You claim to see the bird. I'm sorry, master. I can tell you nothing else because I see only its eye. And so Arjun looses his arrow and it goes straight through the eye socket of the wooden bird. He is the only one to hit the target. So he hits the mark. But the story doesn't end there, because this world is a treasure trove of lessons. And everything, I'm afraid, is a test. Jesus reminds us, if the flesh came into being because of the spirit, it is a wonder. But if the spirit came into being because of the body, it is a wonder of wonders. Indeed, I am amazed how this great wealth has made its home in this poverty. Meaning our origin is not here. We are much greater than the form we see. And it is time for us to really remember that. Then we must find that wealth within and unlock the gates. We must not be like the priests of the temple who do not wish to go in themselves, but who hide the keys from those that do. That really will not do. As G.R.S. Mead writes, the technical inner teachings of Gnosticism were assailed by the subsequently Orthodox Church fathers with misrepresentation and overwhelmed with ridicule. To these onslaughts, the Gnostics, as far as we are aware, made no reply. Most probably because they were bound by oaths of secrecy on the one hand, and on the other knew well that the mysteries of the inner life could not be decided by vulgar debate. The mystic teachings of their gospel were for those who knew the nature of the inner life by direct experience. For the rest, They were foolishness. And what Mead is also getting at is, by being pure, you can achieve so much more knowledge, understanding, and development by entering into the inner spiritual worlds, the inner worlds of direct experience. And the so-called secrets are all there. You can even work out your own practices if you want to, but essentially it boils down to a process of discovery where one enters the heart of one's being. Keeping the love commandments with your direction trained on the Father and finding the universe within, containing all that is around us as well as so much more. Yet the Gospels, Acts, and other Christian romances are designed not so much to help you get there as to help you make sense out of what you find when you do. So if we are going to be pure, then the most important thing is to continue, to keep going into your heart, to keep disentangling from the things of the world. The things of the world can corrupt you when you hold on to them. But if you let them go, if you put them down, you'll be all right. A wayfarer, passerby. Like an old client of mine, some bad things happened to her as a child, and it was a man who was responsible for this. And she could have ended up hating all men, but she decided she would turn it around. Yes, she would always hate this one man, but all other men she was determined to love. The more she worked at it, the better she became at it, until she was a very happy person and a very loving person. And even the more different or strange the person, the more she realized she could love them, and the more she saw in them what others did not see, even that they were deserving of more of her love. And so she learned to have a very happy life because she turned the feelings of pain she had around differently and purified them. But Arjun is an interesting character. He is a great example of one-pointedness. In many ways, he is a great example of a particular kind of purity. Even his name implies it. Arjun means white, in the sense of pure. The purity that arises from concentration. And even he eventually misses the mark when he has a problem with a Deva woman. He is somehow cursed and made lame. His cognate, the Hellenic hero Orion and Arjun are pretty much the same word, also runs into this problem, as I believe he is accused of something with regard to somebody's daughter, possibly true or false charges, perhaps some misunderstanding because it depends on which version you hear. But he is subsequently blinded for his trouble. And the implication is that it's not really just, but it's just what happened. So he goes wandering endlessly until he meets the goddess of the dawn, Aurora, who restores his sight with her tears falling into his eyes, and he learns about love. I think he is reunited with his true love, and the tale has a few similarities to Rapunzel, whose prince is also blinded until her tears restore his sight at their reunion. That's a bit more of a romantic tale, I guess. Arjun and Orion are both examples of the prodigal son archetype. Start out so well, but they make some mistake having to do with desire and fall quite far into the land of the lost. And in a way, you see, that's us. We are the prodigal children who have fallen despite starting out so well. Duat, the constellation of Orion, is where the Egyptians say we go when we die. But actually, Orion is our local space. Anyone looking from elsewhere than Orion would place our solar system inside the Orion constellation. So you see, we are all Orions. We have incredible powers of concentration and can become great hunters, but we are also blind, especially to our own faults. So we often miss the mark. But it's never too late for the prodigal son to return home. And they do say the kingdom is all around us. And if you are here, and you are, you need to know that you are a peculiar people. Are there any thoughts which are not prayers? Are there any actions which are not the proceedings of His providence? There are none. But anyway, I was talking about the White Queen of Heaven, and she asked her advisor about her problematic husband, why he was carrying so much dust. It upset her that he had so much dust around him, and it seemed like always he had this. And her advisor sighed and said her man just couldn't let it go, for now anyway. There would come a time when he would put down the dust, but it was up to him to put it down, to let it go. So she hoped he would let it go soon, so he could come back up and join her in heaven at her side. Thank you.